Yes.
I got to wear my ring.
Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Friday. Fly Jams Friday coming up. That is not a fly jam, by the way, that we are listening to right now. Imagine your alarm clock, your car, your radio alarm clock going off every morning with that song at the same time every day over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Well, that's what happens to Bill Murray. He wakes up to that song 8 billion times and relives the same day over and over and over again in a classic film directed by the late, great Harold Ramis that I will be screening. I will be hosting a screening of on Groundhog Day on Tuesday. Tuesday, February 2nd is indeed Groundhog Day, and we will be screening Groundhog Day at the Movieco Theater in Rosemont. The tickets are really flying, so you might want to get your reservations in there now. We're going to meet at 7 o'clock, have some dinner at Bogart's Restaurant. The movie will start at 8. I'll introduce it, and then we'll show the movie. You can have cocktails during the movie, and you can have food and all kinds of great stuff. We have a blast during these screenings. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. Make your reservations right now because, like I said, tickets are selling really, really fast on this one. You can go to movieco.com. That's M-U-V-I-C-O, M-U-V-I-C-O, movieco.com. And pick out the seats that you want. A seating chart will pop up. You pick out the seats that you want. They'll be waiting for you Tuesday when you come to the theater. So, Groundhog Day. One of the stars of Groundhog Day, who has been a frequent guest on this show, I like to call a friend of this show, is the great actor Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen Tobolowsky, of course, plays insurance salesman Needle-Nose Ned Ryerson in the movie. And we are going to attempt to Skype with Stephen after the movie. And if technology doesn't fail us, it'll happen. We'll have Stephen right up on the big screen there, and you can ask him questions. And he joins us now, not just to talk about that, but to talk about other things, including his storytelling film, The Primary Instinct, which is now available on Hulu. And he's been on the show several times. He's awesome, one of the greatest storytellers on earth, and we're really glad to have him back. Stephen, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey, good morning, Nick. Yeah. Good morning.
It's great to have you on. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I really appreciate you. You know, I mean, I reached out to you in some way to say, hey, could you be a part of our screening of Groundhog Day? And you immediately got back to me, and I was thrilled with that. And we're going to attempt to do this Skype thing on Tuesday.
I think we should be able to do it. I just got some kind of instructions today, and so, you know, we'll practice it too and see how the technology works.
Well, I'm going to get to the theater. You know, it's the screening should start around 8:10-ish our time, central time, and then we would get you on afterwards to do the Q&A, which would be around 10 o'clock central time, so it would be 8 o'clock your time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It'd be juicy. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we'll test it out beforehand. So probably I'll get there a couple or about an hour before the screening, and we'll test it out to see if we make contact and do all that cool stuff. But I'm sure it'll work out, and it's going to be great.
Yep.
Okay. Since we are talking about Groundhog Day, is that the one movie? Is that the movie? I mean, you've been in 9,000 movies and television shows, just roughly. Does that one get you the most recognition?
Probably, I would have to say yes, just in terms of numbers. Probably one person, not a day, but at least every other day, someone comes up to me. I know you, don't I? Mm-hmm. And it's usually Ned. It's usually Ned. That's the one that is the most familiar. I think probably number two now is Californication.
Yeah.
People yell out. I think the weirdest one that I ever got was I was in line at a theater in Westwood, and a guy turned around and says, wait a minute, aren't you the voice of Bando the Country Dog? And I go, I am the voice of Bando the Country Dog. That was the weirdest one I ever got.
That's great. Hey, speaking of voice work, I'm hearing you on Candy, a Candy commercial now.
Oh, my God. Are they playing that?
It's the Snickers commercial. It's like a...
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, Nick.
I recognize your voice immediately.
Nick, you are the... You're always the first. It's like... the audience may not know this. Nick is the first guy who liked the movie, Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party, and we had this huge discussion when I was in New Orleans shooting the last film with Lindsay Lohan before she went insane. what was that? Lady Luck or something? And we talked for an hour or something. We told theater stories. You were one of the first guys to read my book, Dangerous. Now you are the first guy who hears the Snickers commercial.
Yeah. You do a great job. I saw at least there's two, at least I don't know how many you did, Stephen, but I've seen at least two different ones with two words that shouldn't be together. I've seen two different ones. I don't know. How many did you cut? Do you know?
I cut probably 7 of them.
Okay.
And they weren't too sure which ones they were going to use. And so you do several alternates.
Yeah.
It was unclear. I mean, no one is hearing us, right?
Yeah.
It was unclear as to whether I was going to get this commercial because they were looking for several people all over the country.
Yeah. Well, you got it.
I went into a studio to audition. I went to audition and then they said, well, I think you've got it. And so I went and taped several of the Snickers commercials and I hadn't heard any. So I was going like, oh, I wonder if they started now, because the last I heard I'd recorded all these Snickers commercials and they said they were going to send it back to the Snickers people to get final approval and they would get back to me. And I never heard anything until tonight, until this very moment.
Well, I'm glad.
I had success.
I'm glad I could be the bearer of good news for you, Steve.
The bearer of good news, man. I love it. And let me tell you, I have grown so much respect for people who do voice work. Mm-hmm. I used to be like a moron, like so many people thinking like, well, hey, I have a voice. I could do voice work. It is so difficult, and it takes so much work to do it. And I, on Californication, I work with Pam Adlon, who's won Emmy Awards for her voice work. She did King of the Hill. She played Bobby, King of the Hill.
Yep.
And I work with Yardley, is she the voice of...
She's Bart Simpson, Yardley Smith, yeah.
Bart Simpson, yeah. Mm-hmm. I worked with her in theater, and... it is so difficult to do voice work because this is one thing you do. And I mean, everybody knows you do it. And they talk about when you are on the radio, everybody imagines that you're talking to, thousands of people. But in truth, the really successful people on radio are always talking to one person.
Mm-hmm.
One. And even though there are thousands listening, we all feel like you're talking to us. And it's different from theater, because when you do theater, you do have an audience of 100, 200, 300. In Broadway, 2,000, you are speaking to a large audience. But when you do voice work, your theater, your range is the 5 inches between your mouth and that microphone.
Yeah.
That is the Roman Colosseum. That is your theater, and you have to reach that one person and those thousands, those millions of people just with that 5 inches. And I have learned to, oh my gosh, when I work with some of these really great voice people now, I go, how do they do it? It's such a skill. It's such an art. Oh, so they're playing the Snickers.
Yeah, the Snickers commercials are on, Steve. And literally 2 seconds after the first word came out, I went, that's Tobolowsky. Like, immediately. But, I'm so glad, Stephen. It's really nice of you to mention that. Only a class act like you, Stephen, would go out of his way to talk about the talent of voice artists. And it just makes you, it just makes you even more likable, Stephen, because it is... it's an art form like that. It takes a lot of skill to do that. I've had Billy West on my show many times, and he has done tons of voice work, and he's brilliant. He's magnificent at it, and it is an art form. And more and more, people are getting hired. you know, actors are getting hired to do voice work, and in animated movies, really well-known people are doing voice work, but they're not, they're just being themselves. Like, they hire, you know, they hire Will Smith to sound like Will Smith in an animated
movie.
Whereas a lot of these really great voice artists who were trained like that, you know, who used to do work for Warner Brothers and all that stuff, it's kind of an art form that's dying. And to have you, you know, talk about how much talent it takes to do that is really nice.
I'm lucky enough. I'm doing a cartoon show, and I think it is Disney. It's a big thing, and I'm not supposed to talk about it. I won't talk about it specifically because it hasn't been released yet. And I have a semi-regular role on there, and I'm kind of doing the Will Smith thing. You know, I do a very simple thing. I'm kind of the straight guy, and I just talk like me.
Yeah.
But I get to work with some of these heavy hitters in the voice industry.
Yeah.
And one of the women I was working with in one scene played the daughter, the daughter's mother, and their dog.
Oh, man.
All in this, and it was just one person in the scene where she would do the mother. Honey, will you come here? Sure, Mom, I'm coming here.
Yeah.
And to watch the way she was able to place her voice instantly and create that space, that arena between your mouth and the microphone, it was like watching a great magician.
Really? Great stuff. Really, really great stuff. Well, that's great. Well, yeah, so far they've run two different Snickers ads.
Fabulous.
Steven. Fabulous. So there you go. Now, I don't know, do you get paid every time? Yeah, I mean, you get paid every time they show that, right?
Well, it in some form, yes. In some form, it's always ka-ching. I think the way it works is, at least this part of the formula is the same as it used to be. When you do a commercial, a voice commercial, something like this, they usually break it into 13-week segments. So you get paid X amount of money, usually like a buyout, for the first 13 weeks, and they can play it as much as they want in those 13 weeks, and you get a certain amount of money.
Oh, yeah.
And then if they play more than that, something like that.
I gotcha. All right, Stephen, hang on, okay? Hang on. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us. He's a tremendous actor. He's been in a ton of movies. One of the movies that he's in is Groundhog Day, which I'm hosting a screening of on Tuesday. And Stephen's going to be kind enough to join us for the post-screening Q&A via Skype. And you'll be able to ask him questions and talk to him. And he's been in a million things. We've got more to talk about, including his new storytelling film, The Primary Instinct, which you can watch on Hulu. Lots of great stuff to talk about with Stephen Tobolowsky. And we'll continue our conversation after we take this break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. The opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran live in Naperville at 6 o'clock. Make sure you stay tuned for that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show and Facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest right now is a great actor, Stephen Tobolowsky, who's been in a million things. His new storytelling film, The Primary Instinct, is available on Hulu, and his podcasts are available. The Tobolowsky Files are also available, and we'll talk about that as well. And he's also been in a million movies, including Groundhog Day, and he's going to join us on Tuesday via Skype when I screen Groundhog Day. We can talk about Groundhog Day a little bit, Stephen, but, you know, I'd rather, like, have people come out because I know you're going to tell some stories about Groundhog Day.
Yeah, we could save it.
Yeah. So, when was the last time you saw Groundhog Day?
I saw Groundhog Day last Groundhog Day. I was invited up to San Francisco to Sketchfest. I guess in a way to do what we're going to do this Groundhog Day is they did a screening of the film, and then I went up and told some Groundhog Day stories, and audiences asked me questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I had seen the film in a while. And this was what was remarkable about it. I mean, we all know it's a wonderful movie. We know it's a great story. We know Bill Murray, it's one of his greatest performances ever. But here's something I was struck with.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful movie. It's a beautiful movie to watch. I was I believe John Bailey is the cinematographer.
Yeah, that's right.
It's so gorgeous. And before, you know, I always thought, oh, it's just kind of working class folk. And they're also, when you watch this film, the color in the film and the look of the film, it's gorgeous. Mm. And really was really impressed at the way the film was put together, just as a film. Gorgeous.
Yeah, great. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it on the big screen. It'll be 4K digital projection, great sound.
Oh, you're kidding. You got the 4K?
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful. It's just going
to
be
great. I've seen the 4K print, and the 4K print is not to be believed.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And the fact that you're going to be there is going to be so much fun to for everybody to hear the great stories. All right, speaking of stories, Stephen, one of the things that we love about you, besides your tremendous acting ability and just an all-around great guy, is your incredible ability to tell great stories. Did you realize that at a young age? Were you a storyteller all the way back since you were a kid?
I know I won the storytelling contest when I was in sixth grade at my school. And basically, I just read this really great story in a book, and I told people the story I read, which was a really great story, and it's still a great story. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't an original story. It wasn't until later in my life that I've had several catastrophes that people would usually gather around in the kitchen, and I would tell these horrible stories of things that happened to me, like getting held hostage at gunpoint or getting kidnapped by monks in Thailand and beat with sticks, and also buying drugs for our band and being pulled over by the police in Texas, you know, horrible things like this, working with David Byrne and on True Stories. Yeah. I would tell these stories and people would gather around, and Robert Brinkman, and you were the one who picked up on him. Brinkman is the one who did the first storytelling movie I did, which was Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party,
right?
Which is a wonderful film to watch. And then I guess I had that real catastrophe a few years ago when I broke my neck.
Yeah.
Riding on a horse on the side of an active volcano in Iceland. I just go like, my God, what a moron. But when I got back to America, the doctor told me I had a fatal injury, which...
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking, like, what a terrible thing for a doctor to tell a living patient. And I went home, and I'm thinking, like, well, what if what the doctor said was true, and I did have a fatal injury? What would be the stories I would want my boys to know about their dad that they had never heard? And when you have a broken neck, you can't really do a lot. So I began writing these true stories about my life that I wanted my kids to know. And that's when I ran into David Chen, who was a student at Harvard at the time, who was a fan of Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party. And he said, why don't we record some more stories that you did like in Birthday Party? So I said, well, just so happens, I've been writing some new stories. And that's what became the Tobolowsky Files.
And people can get the Tobolowsky Files podcast everywhere, like iTunes and things like that.
iTunes and everywhere, and it's free.
It's free.
No salesman will call. We had an offer from Microsoft to pay us money to sponsor the podcast, and I think they were going to pay us like $1,000 an episode, and now there's 72 episodes or so that would have been nice, but we would have had to fill the podcast with commercials. Mm-hmm. And so David and I just said, no. We're doing it for free. We're putting it out for free. And I got to say, it was a great decision because so many things have come to us from doing it for free. Mm-hmm. You never know what will happen. And one of them, I guess, was Primary Instinct, in that David wanted to end up making a movie of his own of the concert films I've been doing. And he was living in Seattle, so we rented out a big theater. And we sold tickets, and like 1,000 people came. We raised the money through Kickstarter, and we got a film crew from Chicago to film it.
Nice.
And they stuck cameras all over the place, and it is a a film of part of that live concert, and it is a funny and kind of heartbreaking and just delightful movie. They just put it together so great. And it's, I look at it and I go, like, how on earth did we do it? Mm-hmm. But it's really a good sit. As I say, I've seen that film probably a dozen times now. I'm going up to Seattle to see it again. Mm-hmm. They're having a screening of it, and they wanted me to speak and answer questions. So I'm going to be doing that in a couple of weeks.
And it's now available. People can see it on Hulu.
On Hulu, yep. and I believe it's on iTunes. It's on all those video on demand spots.
Got it.
You can get it. And if you go to theprimaryinstinct.com, they'll have all the places you can see the film. But certainly Hulu, they're very sweet. You know, they just announced that they're showing it. So that's terrific. That's an easy spot. And iTunes is easy to see it there.
Okay. And it's called The Primary Instinct.
The Primary Instinct.
That's really great. And I love your podcast, Stephen. I really do. I think they're great. And are some of the stories from the podcast in The Primary Instinct?
Yeah, kind of. Partly yes and partly no. What it is David wanted to do a show of several short stories, which probably would have been a good idea. And I said, well, why don't I do one long story, which was not a good idea because you don't have a lot to cut around when you're doing a movie. And so what I decided to do was tell a story about why people tell stories. And within that story, I tell several stories, some of which are in the podcast, some of which no one's heard before. And they all kind of tie together, and it's based on what my mother used to teach me about. She always was the philosopher in chief of our family. My mom was. Mm-hmm. And she always used to always tell me what the primary instinct was. And so the film is, in a way, a loving way of trying to figure out what the primary instinct really is. Right. And it's enjoyable.
Oh,
it's
good. Enjoyable. Very, very cool. Do you like doing the podcast, Stephen? Is it something that you enjoy?
I love doing it. I haven't done one in about a couple months just because, oh, hey, here's another first for you.
Yeah.
The new book, I just turned it in today.
Oh, good.
So you'll be the first to read it. I'll send it to you when we hear what happens. So I just sent it off. The second book, I had to get that in. So I'll go back to the podcast again.
Yeah. Well, you know,
new stories.
I want to say your first book. I mean, I was unbelievably honored that you sent it to me first.
Yeah.
Like amazingly honored by that. And I've read it three times, Stephen. I love that book. It's so great.
And hopefully you'll like this next one. It's a lot like the first one, but it's different. It's different in that the first one has lots and lots of movie stories in it, which are a lot of fun. This one, Simon & Schuster asked me if I would do, okay, fasten your seatbelts. They said, could you do a book about people and faith? Like people having faith. Mm-hmm. And so I came up with this idea, and I thought, well, you know, here's a premise. But all of our lives, everybody I've ever met, everybody's life kind of fits the template of the Old Testament. This was the premise, that we all have these powerful stories of when we were kids, like creation myths of the beginning of our life. Then we all go into slavery. Then at some point in the middle of our life, whether it be graduate school or drugs or love or heartbreak, and then in the middle of our life, we have this Leviticus moment where we stand up and say, this is what I want to do with my life. This is what I am. And then we end up wandering in the desert for 40 years, and death comes into our life, and death changes us, like in the book of Numbers. And then, like in Deuteronomy, we end up telling our damn stories. And we tell our stories to friends and to children and, you know, on the radio, on Nick. And we tell stories to try to make sense of what our lives were. And that's like Deuteronomy. And so I told the people at Simon & Schuster this idea, and they said, that sounds good.
Yeah.
That's
great.
So I'm telling stories, a lot of stories from my childhood, from my college years, which is kind of Exodus, my marriage to Anne and having children, which is Leviticus, then the death of friends and family, like in Numbers, and then stories about my kids in Deuteronomy. And so I don't know. I find it amusing, but of course I'm prejudiced.
Well, it sounds great to me, Stephen. I can't wait to read it. Stephen, hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right. Stephen Tobolowsky is with us, a tremendous actor, great writer, and a great performer. The movie The Primary Instinct, it's a storytelling film. It is now available on Hulu and iTunes. You can find it on VOD. He's just tremendous, Stephen Tobolowsky. Also starred in Groundhog Day, of which I am hosting a screening this Tuesday, February 2nd at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. Stephen will join us via Skype to tell great stories and answer some questions after the movie. So get your tickets now, MovieCo.com, MUVICO, MovieCo.com. Right. Yeah. Morning. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here. Live in the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran and the gang live in Naperville for the Hometown Voices Tour, sponsored by Allstate. And that'll be coming up after 6 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show, and Facebook.com/Nick D Show is a great way to stay connected. You'll find links to everything that we're talking about with the great actor Stephen Tobolowsky, who joins us and has been on the show many times, and who will join us via Skype following my screening Tuesday that I'm hosting of Groundhog Day at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. And we welcome Stephen back to the show. Stephen, welcome back, sir.
Hey, nice to be back.
All right. I have to ask you, you know, you've been in so many things, and I have questions about some of that stuff, of course, as we always do. But I got to ask you, I have been hearing there's been a massive buzz that Deadwood is going to come back and maybe give us a satisfactory ending. What have you heard about that?
Well, I've heard so many different things. I don't even know what to say now. All I know is no one has called me to reprise my role of Commissioner Jari. But who knows? Maybe they will. But it would be wonderful if they did. You know, I heard that it was – I heard multiple things. The first thing I heard was that David Milch – who was the executive producer and writer on Deadwood, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant creator on that show, that he owned the film rights to Deadwood if he was able to present another program after Deadwood, in which he did John from Cincinnati.
Right.
And so even though no one can make heads or tails of John from Cincinnati, we thought, oh, we're going to do – And I did a few John from Cincinnati shows, and we shot them in San Diego and on the old Deadwood stage, and they had saved the Deadwood set. And I'm thinking, like, are they going to do a movie of this? And then at that point, Tim is going off to do all sorts of other projects, and Ian McShane and Powers Booth, everybody is gone. You know, they're all working on other projects. But now the Justified is coming to an end, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, maybe it could really happen. And, I mean, it was so frustrating because I don't think it's any secret. I don't think I'm telling any tales out of school that what really kind of doomed Deadwood was the budget. Nick, like, people out there may be aware of scheduling for movies and television. In the old days, I guess for a one-hour show, they would spend like maybe 7 or 8 days. So you start the show on Monday and you finish it Wednesday of the next week. That's kind of and then they kind of tighten the schedule to make it almost like 5 days to do a one-hour show. And you're really cranking it out. I've done movies in like 21 days, 28 days. The final episode of Deadwood in season two, how long do you think it took to shoot?
Oh, do you know this? I have no idea, Stephen.
30 days.
Oh, my God.
For a one-hour show, 30 days. Oh. And at one point, they shot the entire episode, and David saw it and go like, you know, we got to change this. And he rewrote the episode and reshot it. And, you know, the people at HBO are saying, like, we cannot do this.
Yeah.
You know, this is like crazy. Yeah. And when I started working on this show, which I believe was season two and three, David Milch showed me the Bible for the book. And every one of these shows, they have a Bible in which they are showing the arc of where the show, they planned it to go. It was going to be magnificent, man.
Yeah.
It was going to be magnificent. And if they are able to take some of the ideas that David had kind of forged in that Bible and put it into a film, it would be really wonderful.
Well, I hope, you know, as I'm sure that you've encountered some very, because Deadwood fans are real passionate. I'm sure you know this, Stephen.
They were, to put it lightly,
they were pissed when the show didn't return.
Yes.
And I was one of them. And so just just them teasing us with the possibility of a movie or it coming back has made the Deadwood fans very happy. And it would make us very happy if you were involved, for sure.
Oh, and me too. I think the worst Deadwood story I have was when I was the first show of the third season, and it was hot as hell. I mean, we had those wool suits and hats and guns and all of that stuff. And it was the one show in Deadwood where I had to ride a horse. So they wanted me riding into town on a horse. And it had to have been about 105, 106 degrees, brutal. And I come into town and I park the horse, jump off of the horse, tie him up. And there's a lot of commotion among the extras. And apparently one of the extras collapsed, heat stroke, died, something bad. And so one of the, the production assistants came over to me and says, Mr. Tobolowsky, get back on your horse. We're going to try to take this again. We have a little problem over here. So I jump up on the horse. And I'm on the left side of the street, and there are 200 extras on the right side of the street, and this is what I witnessed. The first AD and his assistant come, and I'm on my horse behind them, and he goes, we had a little problem in that last take. And the first AD looks over to his assistant. What was his name? He goes, Dan. Had a heart attack, and we have some good news. The ambulances are on the way, and they'll be taking Dan to the trauma center. I'd like to, first of all, just take 10 seconds of silence for Dan, and they gave him about 8 seconds. And he says, you know, Dan loved many things in this life. But one of the things he really loved was this show, Deadwood, and working on Deadwood. And I know the one thing we could do to make Dan happy is if we take it again. So everybody, back to one. I'm like, man, that is cold.
That's cold. Unbelievable. All right, Stephen, hang on, okay?
Yep.
All right, Stephen Tobolowsky is here. See, the guy can tell a story, man. He can tell a story like few other people can. Stephen Tobolowsky's Birthday Party is available on DVD. It's out there in the internets as well. And also the newest film is The Primary Instinct, which is available on Hulu. We'll talk more with Stephen. He's got a lot of stuff to talk about. We got to take a break here for the news, but we will come back and talk more with Stephen Tobolowsky after that right here on 720 WEGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday coming up in about an hour. We also have Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. We have You Big Dummy. All of those coming up right here on WGN. But we want to get back to our guests, and our guest is the great Stephen Tobolowsky. Stephen Tobolowsky is a character actor. He's been in a million movies and TV shows. And he is also in Groundhog Day, of which I'm having a special screening this Tuesday, Groundhog Day, February 2nd, at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. I will introduce the movie. We'll watch it all together. And then afterwards, Stephen Tobolowsky is going to join us via Skype on the big screen and tell you some great Groundhog Day stories and answer some questions. And it's just going to be a great time. And I suggest you make reservations because the tickets are going really quickly. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. And we'll see you this Tuesday night. We'll meet at 7 o'clock for dinner at Bogart's. And then we'll escort everybody into the theater. I'll introduce the movie around 8. And Stephen will join us afterwards. And you can go to movieco.com to make your reservations right now. M-U-V-I-C-O. Stephen, the tickets are flying for this one. People love this
movie. Fabulous.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice big crowd. I do want to mention, we get back to some of this other stuff. Is it fun to work on the Goldbergs, our old buddy Jeff Garland?
I love the Goldbergs. I love working on the Goldbergs, and I just did one last week. I just did a new Goldbergs last week.
Oh, good.
You know, working with Jeff is always great. Working with Wendy is like heaven on earth. Because she is so hilarious. And then occasionally you have to work with the children.
Right.
You have to work with the kids. And right. That you have to use all of your skills. You know, it's usually it takes a few years for a show to become like I did two of the Law and Orders. I did Criminal Intent and I did SVU. Those shows were like just slick as could be. It was worked out. The Goldbergs is awfully slick. They have great directors. They have fantastic writers. And everybody knows what to do. And so when they call up and they say, hey, we got a part for you on the Goldbergs this week, I know it's going to be completely organized. I know it's going to be slick as a whistle, and it's going to be fun.
Good.
So generally what they do is on that show, And I don't know if this is the new thing. So we do it the first time according to the script. And then afterwards, people like Jeff and Wendy and all the people on the show, we just kind of make up our own stuff. And sometimes they put that in the show. But I think other times they put those little bits and pieces into the DVDs or the video extras.
Right.
After the show. So you never know what's going to end up actually in the show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a party.
Well, and it's a very, very popular show. And Jeff's been on this show many times and he's from Chicago. Uh-huh. And to see him, you know, score a home run like this in terms of, you know, like a six, I mean, obviously he was on Curb Your Enthusiasm, helped put that show together and everything.
Yeah.
But this is like a prime time, you know, network series and it's going to get syndicated, you know, and he's going to make syndication money. And that just makes me happy because I love Jeff Garland very much.
The Goldbergs is huge all over the damn world.
Yeah.
I performed this last year in Scotland. I was in Edinburgh and I did some of my stories at the Fringe Festival. People were stopping me on the street talking about, oh, I love the Goldbergs. So the Goldbergs is already, usually it takes a year, 2 years for American TV show to even cross the Atlantic. Goldbergs was immediate.
Yeah.
It's just hysterical.
Yeah,
it's a terrific show.
I do want to mention one other thing. I had you on, you know, when this show was airing and right in the midst of it last year. Big time in Hollywood FL. I have to tell you, that is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. One of the funniest, consistently funny shows I've seen. All 10 episodes are hilarious. You were great on that show.
Thank you so much. And I'm with you, man. It was the funniest damn show I think I've ever been a part of. Those two guys, Alex Ansonger, who played Jack, who was the mean brother,
right,
and the director, Dan Schimpf.
Right.
Alex and Dan, it was one of those, it's the new world, man, because they were students together at NYU, I believe, and they did little videos and things like that together. They did one show that is still on YouTube. You could see it called Next Time on Lonnie. And Alex and Dan did these shows, and it was plucked out. They, you know, Comedy Central saw the show and said, "Hey, let's give these guys a whirl." And we got the whirl, and it was so much fun. And of course, we're still crushed. We're still heartbroken that we didn't get a second season.
I know.
And not because the show was not one of the funniest shows ever on television. These guys are brilliant, and it was wonderful comedy. And, you know, thank goodness we made these 10, but if anybody wants to just laugh their ass off.
Oh, man.
Just
I was no, seriously. I mean, I it was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. All 10 episodes are out there. You can get them on Amazon, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Some people are doing some incredible work. You and Kathy Baker together, unbelievable. And Keith David was hilarious, but I got to say, Michael Madsen shows up in it. He's fantastic in it. But I got to say, I couldn't believe how unbelievably hysterical Cuba Gooding Jr. was in it.
Can you believe that?
Oh.
Can you believe that?
It's just amazing.
He was, and you know, he didn't want to do the show. And Alex and Dan said, "Please, just let's have dinner together." And he says, "Well, I don't like the idea of playing just Cuba Gooding Jr. You know, I'm an actor. I want to play character." And they said, "Well, you'll be playing a character."
Yeah.
But he was playing Cuba Gooding Jr., but in another dimension.
Yes.
And it, I mean, his performance in that show is a minor miracle.
Yeah.
It is just amazing.
You know, everybody got to do some jaw-dropping stuff in that show, including you, man. They had you doing some stuff. I was like, what the hell is going on?
Oh, God.
Yeah, great stuff.
So funny.
Yeah. Okay, Stephen, real quick, I don't want to tell too many stories about Groundhog Day, but let's just say, how did you get the part of Ned Ryerson?
Man. Okay. This is a brutal story, and I'll make it short and sweet. I was working on a film out of town called Calendar Girl. And I was playing a gangster who had a deaf-mute brother. And I got called in to audition for Harold Ramis. And it was about a two-hour and 40-minute drive from location to audition. So I go and I have my first audition with Harold Ramis and drive the 2.5 hours back to the set. And for some reason, the one time in my entire career that the producers said, "We don't have enough room at the hotel to put all the actors up in a separate room, so we're putting you and the guy who plays my brother, Kurt Fuller, we're going to put the
Kurt Fuller together
in a room." So at night, we're there like on summer camp, and we're in our like twin beds. And Kurt says, like, "So you got anything coming up?" And I had learned through hard experience that no actor wants to hear that another actor has had some sort of audition or something. The only thing that'll make an actor happy is if they hear that they've dropped out of show business and are opening a sandwich shop. So I say to Kurt, I said, "No, nothing's happening, man. Nothing. You know, just knocking on doors and that kind of thing." I said, "How about you? You got anything coming up?" He says, "Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. Harold Ramis is a personal friend of mine, and he wrote this part for me, Ned Ryerson, from this new movie, Groundhog Day, with Bill Murray. We've already been rehearsing."
Oh, God.
And as soon as this finishes in like 2 weeks, I'm going to Chicago and we're going to film the movie. At this point, my brain is exploding. I'm in bed, and I know this story is going to have an unhappy ending for someone. I get a call back, and now I feel completely implicated in like this Borgia plot. I drive the 2.5 hours back. I audition for Harold Ramis. Come back. On the way back to the set, I get the phone call that I got cast as Ned Ryerson. Kurt got the call as well that I was cast as Ned Ryerson. What words can... Now, you act, too. You know the brutality of this. Absolute. He felt betrayed. He felt his soul was murdered. And I cannot describe the hurt and anger he had. Anyway, I go off and I play Ned Ryerson. They put the movie together. Opening night, I'm doing some show at Fox, Civil Wars. And so Andy McDowell asks if I will go with her to the opening of Groundhog Day so no one will hit on her. Because she knew I was married. So I said, sure, sure. And I left. And we go to the movie together. It's in Westwood. And Kurt Fuller is waiting in front of the theater. And he says, I'm going to watch the movie with you. And Kurt comes in. And we watched the movie. At the end of the movie, Kurt says to me, well, you got my part, but at least you did a good job with it. And he hugged me and said, congratulations, man.
Wow.
And walked off. And I said, for the rest of my career, I will endeavor to be as classy as Kurt Fuller. And to, I would not have had the guts to do that.
Yeah,
but
wow.
I look up to him very much for that ever since.
And you know, it's funny because Kurt Fuller was in Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
He always plays villains too, Stephen, which is
he
interesting.
Always plays
villains.
And you know, I asked Harold Ramis. We did a fundraiser for a school in New Mexico. And we were in New Mexico together. And I said, how did I get the part of Ned Ryerson? I did ask him later, about 10 years after the film was done. And he said, well, you came in. And I remember I called Bill Murray up on the phone. I said, we found our Ned Ryerson. He's the most obnoxious person I've ever met. That's how you got it.
Well, Stephen, always, it's such a joy to have you on the show, man. Every time you're on, it's always great. And I really, really appreciate you taking the time to join us on Tuesday after the screening. And that's just one great story. We'll hear many, many more. Stephen Tobolowsky in Groundhog Day. And if you come to the screening on Tuesday, he will be there via Skype and answer your questions and tell more stories. The Primary Instinct is available on Hulu and on iTunes and so many more things that are out there. Stephen Tobolowsky's birthday party and tons of movies. He's working on the Goldbergs and all that stuff. Always keeping busy. Stephen, thank you so much. And I'll talk to you on Tuesday. Really looking forward to it.
You bet, Nick. I'm looking forward myself.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Okay, man. Bye-bye. Bye.
There you go. Stephen Tobolowsky, everybody. Man, oh, man. What an incredibly entertaining man. Such a nice guy. Such a great actor. Everything about the guy is fantastic, and he will be joining us via Skype. So get your tickets now. Make your reservations now. Groundhog Day this Tuesday, MovieCo Theater in Rosemont. And it's MUVICO.com. MovieCo.com. Reserve your seats now. It's going to be a fun night. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. It's Friday, Fly Jams Friday. Coming up after 4. Just a few minutes, we'll have our regular features, Straight Out of Context. You know what that is. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody says something that can, you can pull it out of context and it sounds dirty, jot all the info down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We got Nick D Show Spy. That's when you listen 24/7. Whenever I'm mentioned or the show is mentioned in any capacity, jot it down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. You big dummy. Also coming up. All right. That was so much fun talking to Tobo. He is just unbelievable. He's unbelievable. Dan, you know, he's been on with, you know, that you and I have been working together. You and I have been working together for over 2 years, a little over 2 years now. And he's, I mean, every time he knocks it out of the park.
Right.
Every time. It's just, and he never ceases to amaze me with, because I've heard him tell, I can't tell you how many stories I've heard that guy tell.
Right.
And then he comes up with another one.
It, you know, like the story that you tell at parties, you know, your story that always knocks him dead and it's the great icebreaker.
Yeah.
He has one of those like every day of his life.
Exactly right. Exactly right, man. God, he's so cool. And I'm not kidding. I sent him a note on Facebook. I messaged him. And I was like, hey, Steven, I'm hosting the screening. You know, I was just going to say, you know, can you like maybe send us an email or something that I can read or whatever? And he came back to me. He's like, let's Skype it. Let me be a part of it. And I was like, wow, that's cool. I was going to suggest maybe he record something and we can show it. But he wants to do it live.
Because he did that for your Freddy Got Fingered defense, right?
Yeah, he recorded a video for my I don't know. Esmeralda, have you ever seen the movie Freddy Got Fingered?
No. What?
Do you know what it is?
Yeah, it's that Tom Green movie.
Yeah, it's
movie.
Tom Green, right. Mm-hmm. Tom Green's in it, wrote, directed it. I happen to think it's a great film. I happen to think it's a masterpiece. And over at Columbia College, they do this thing called Cinema Slapdown. And they do it once a month. Ron Falzone, who's with the film department at Columbia, is the host. He wears a referee shirt and has a whistle. And they screen a movie in the screening room on the eighth floor there. They screen a movie. And then after the movie, someone takes the pro side and someone takes the con side. And they debate. And the audience and the students who are in the audience can chime in. And then someone is declared a winner at the end. You have an opening statement, and then you know, and then the debate begins. So, I happen to seriously adore Freddy Got Fingered. I love it. I think it's actually a pretty great film. And, so Ron over at Columbia is like, well, listen, we have to do this movie because you're literally the only person on the planet that likes it. And everybody else in the world hates it. So he didn't have a hard time finding someone to take the con side for Freddy Got Fingered. And I'm pretty sure that there was a line around the block for people who hated the movie. And he, in fact, put me up against five guys from Improv Olympic. They were like five trainers and improvisers at Improv Olympic. And he put me up against five guys. And I got to tell you, I destroyed them. I destroyed them. And I won over the crowd, and the movie won over the crowd, too. Like, there were people in the audience who, when it was over, like film students who were like, wow, that was pretty great. And so because I know Tom Green, and so I asked Tom if he would be a part of it, and he was like, no, because that it brought back, like, bad memories. It was a really bad time for him. And, like, when that movie came out, it got destroyed and ripped apart by the critics and everything, and nobody understood what he was really trying to do with the movie. Except me. And it was right around that time when he and Drew Barrymore were married and their house burnt down. So it was like, and he really took it on the chin. When that movie came out, it kind of signaled his downfall, his career downfall. And he knows that. So he didn't really want to, you know, he's like, look, I spent enough time defending that movie and I'm not going to do it anymore. And I said, well, I got your back, man. Because I told him about it. Now, Stephen Tobolowsky, who we just heard, was in Freddy Got Fingered, but got cut out. Like Tom edited him out of the movie, and he had like an entire subplot, and there was like a musical number, and he and Tom Green, Stephen Tobolowsky like made out with a guy in Indian makeup, and then like he and Tom Green were like swimming around in melted cheese at one point, and all this stuff was cut out of the movie. So I said, hey, Stephen. So I contacted Stephen. I was like, look, Tobo, can you? I'm doing this defense of Freddy Got Fingered at this thing called Cinema Slapdown. And I would love to surprise the people that are going against me if you could cut a video of yourself defending the movie and, you know, talking about how great the movie is, even though you were cut out of it. And, like, he did it, and it's hysterical. By the way, it's on YouTube if you'd like to watch it, the video of him defending Freddy Got Fingered. So, like, if you just go to YouTube and you type in my name and Stephen Tobolowsky, that video comes up. And I surprised the hell out of these guys from I.O. because beforehand I had set up with the tech person in the booth. I was like, look, when I give you the signal, hit play, and Stephen Tobolowsky is going to pop up on the screen and talk about how right I am and how wrong the guys from I.O. are and how brilliant Freddy Got Fingered is. And he did it, and it killed. The crowd went nuts. It's like 5 minutes long. It wasn't like he just did like a two-second thing. It's like, I don't know exactly how long it is. I think it's like around 5 minutes. And then he actually goes so far as to, like, insult Improv Olympic. He goes, look, I've shared space with Improv Olympic. They're really dirty. You know, when I walked in there to rehearse after those guys, they left their muffin wrappers all over the place. It smelled distinctly of marijuana. Now look at them. Now look at Nick. Now look at them and now look at Nick. Nick is right, you know. So it was great. And he described working on the movie and what the movie was, he thought, what it was about. So I did have an ace up my sleeve, but I did kill these guys because they came very unprepared. They didn't even watch the movie. They didn't. I mean, they yeah, we've seen it before. We're not going to. So they didn't even sit there and watch the movie. So when they came in, their argument was, yeah, it was stupid. You know what I mean? Like, that was their argument. And I was like, I nailed these guys. I killed those guys in that debate. So it's on YouTube if you want to see Stephen Tobolowsky defending Freddy Got Fingered and, you know, for my appearance at the Cinema Slapdown. All right, we got a break. Hey, by the way, right after 3:30, Esmeralda, you're going to love this.
What's that?
We have more Kids Reading Time Corners with a Christopher Walken perspective.
Yay!
Yes, we have more. So we'll do that right after the news, which is up next.